Okay, awesome. Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, for sure.
Where are
You're on
you?
the East Coast.
I'm in Florida right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
Cool.
so nighttime here, had the early dinner. It's the ride culture here is very early. It's like people ride at 5:30 before it gets hot or traffic. So it's like I just got down here, so bedtime is like pretty early. But
Oh,
it's good.
wow. Okay. That's like Tucson. I know people who like, at least in the summer, they're up at like 4, riding early. That's the only way to do it.
I never thought I would ride this early, but one, I actually lived in Nashville for a little while and my friend moved there before me and he was like, "Oh yeah, we leave at 5:30." I was like, "What? How? Why?" And then I realized just how hot it can get. So, you adapt, but and where are you right now?
Jeez. Right now I'm in Northern California,
Okay.
in my hometown. So yeah, we're kind of based here for the next 6 weeks or so, and then we go on to the next training base.
Where's that going to take you?
So we're gonna go, well, first Cole, his family's from Washington, so we're gonna go Christmas with them and then head over to Girona for the first few months of the year.
Okay. Awesome. So this is great. We're just going to roll into this. Well, let
Yeah,
me
okay, cool.
I always forget to ask people to do an intro and I don't want to put words in your mouth. So Sevilla Blanc, who are you?
Yeah, I'm Sevilla Blanc. I am 24 years old and I race cross country mountain bike for Rock Rider Ford Racing Team. And yeah.
Let's do the minute flashback of starting in Nika, which a lot of American cyclists, especially people on the mountain bike side, have fond memories of. When you think back to that, like what stands out? And when you left there, were you like, this is what I love? Like, this is who I'm gonna become in my 20s? Or like, give us that blurb. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, gosh, 1 minute, that's not long, but okay, I'll try to make
It
it
can be more than a
condensed.
minute. It can be whatever you think back, whatever that feeling is.
Yeah, for sure. No, for me, I think it really started. I grew up in kind of a rural town. Like nature was our backyard. I grew up with two older brothers, and growing up, like playing was being on our bikes or not on bikes, just outside, outdoors, chasing each other around, whether it's like building janky jumps and pump tracks in the backyard or like exploring the backyard trails and fire roads and kind of a lot of it was on bikes. And I think the competitive aspect with me and my brothers really sparked that kind of fire inside of me from a young age. And then one of my older brothers started racing through NICA, and that's kind of what like kind of when I realized that you can race these bikes and that there's a high school league and it was nearby and it's something that maybe I could do. It's funny because I was really inspired by my brother, and at first it was kind of like I just want to do what he does, and it was I had like kind of a love-hate relationship with a bike. Sometimes, I didn't I really wanted to be a racer and be like him, but sometimes I didn't always enjoy like getting out on the bike and like training and climbing. Like I hated climbing. I loved going downhill, but and then over the years that kind of grew and became something that was like came from within me, and it was just like I had this fire and motivation for it. But yeah, and then I started racing through NICA in high school, similar to him, and just kind of took that trajectory. I was kind of skipping around from little development teams in my junior years. It started kind of just as mom and pop, going to like some pro XCTs. I think we went to I camped at Fontana Pro XCT in the back of my parents' minivan with my dad when I was like 16 or something. And then later was on Barra development team. So that kind of really gave me the support and resources that I needed to race more nationally and internationally.
You were doing van life before it was even a thing.
Yeah, I guess it was.
That's awesome. Do either of your brothers still ride or race?
No, no. He stopped like after high school, and now we're all doing super different things. And I just, yeah, kind of took the riding.
I think, you know, and I grew up in upstate New York. I don't know if Nika is really up there. I didn't even know, this sounds crazy to say, that bike racing was really a thing. Like, yeah, I heard of the Tour de France. It would come on TV. But when I started riding, I was 26, and a kid that I played volleyball with in high school, we crossed paths. He's like, dude, I raced bikes when we were in high school. I'm like, wait, what? And he's like, yeah, I'm a Cat One. I've been riding for years. And I was like, wait, where are you doing this? Found the club, all this stuff. So I'm always, when I hear about Nike, I've coached a few people down in the Atlanta area. And it's just like, man, I hope you guys realize how awesome this is that you've found something that they're so passionate of. And the group, I don't know, Nike just seems like it brings up so many good vibes for kids in this sport. And I just don't think like endurance sports aren't as big in the US as they are in Europe. And so that's cool to kind of hear you going through that. And what did you not like about training when you were at that age, like getting into it? You're like, I didn't really want to get on the bike sometimes and train. Were you doing like workouts or just riding in general?
Yeah, I was just riding in general. And I think that I didn't like climbing. And I grew up like around here, you have to climb to do any kind of ride on the dirt, and it's steep. And it was just hard. Like, I remember stopping, like, we have this kind of this one kind of mountain behind my house. And the climb is like 15 minutes to the top. And I remember I'd always have to stop halfway. And then I remember the time when I didn't have to stop, and that was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm feeling better. I'm feeling a little more, like a little stronger. But yeah, I think it was that. And then also just like wanting people to ride with, kind of to motivate you to get out the door. But yeah, I think I became a really like, intrinsically motivated person through that. And I love riding with people, but it's funny because Cole is like so motivated by riding with friends and training with people, and I'm like, I'm totally fine like training alone. Like, I love like group rides and stuff, but we're really different in that way, which is funny.
Yeah, I love, there's something about solo rides. I sometimes, you will say I'm like antisocial. I'm like, no, I like you guys. I just really like solo training. If I have workout, I don't want to do it with somebody else. And I don't know, some people, they just don't understand that.
Yeah.
When you were, you made the comment that you would see progress, like you had to stop halfway and you got going. Then you like, when you're younger, and I've actually never really thought about this because I wasn't doing the sport then, you don't have a power meter. You're probably not wearing a heart rate monitor. What was it that you were like, how did you gauge little bits of progress? Was it just the races and how you finished? Or was there something then that you got that internal feeling of like, oh, I'm on right now? Or did that come later?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and hard to pinpoint that. But I think there were so many times throughout like my trajectory through the sport that kind of gave me those little bits and bits of motivation that kind of just kept me like hungry for more. And honestly, I can't remember when it was like at such a young age when I was like just starting to ride, but when I started racing in Nika, like it was like there were so many other girls who were in my category I was racing against, and we were battling it out. And I think just like every race, seeing like what I can improve technically or physically or mentally is something that was so like just motivating to be better, a little bit better every time. And those are three things that still like, that's like one of the biggest things I love about the sport, is like how there's always improvements you can make mentally, physically, or technically.
Let's go in on the mental. What comes to mind, no pun intended, when you think about that? What's something maybe even recently in the past year that you've been trying to go after mentally that has maybe you haven't been as strong mentally on before?
Yeah, you know, I think, this past season has felt like it's the biggest season of my career in many ways, but also the most intense. It's the first season that I've raced pretty much a full World Cup calendar, and my first year on a full factory team, a European team. So a lot of big changes that made it more intense, and then just racing the World Cup calendar and having some results, and it felt really intense. And I really more than ever had to find ways to kind of just balance myself throughout the year. I mean, I'm on the road like 10 or 11 months throughout the season, and racing, spending a lot of time living in Europe, going back and forth overseas. So always battling like jet lag, being in a new place, a new bed, and then also having to perform at the highest level. So I think I've really tried to hone in on like just every time I transition into a new environment or a new place, just trying to like balance myself and work on like just getting into that routine and that rhythm as quick as possible. And it might not seem like mental, but to me it's like it's a really a skill that I'm continuing to work on, but so important to be able to like make those transitions as smooth as I can, and just feel like having my routines really helps, because wherever you are, you can just like pick them up again. And maybe you're in France and yesterday you were in Colorado, but you like as an athlete, you like, I have to do that because I'm preparing to race in, you know, 5 days or whatever it is. So yeah, that's been like a big challenge that I'm just continuing to work on. But
finding that balance is a good tip for people to try and focus on when they're going abroad or something. But within that, you had mentioned like getting back on your routine. How do you do that? Like the sleep, that was actually one thing I was going to ask you, with the sleeping, your schedule off, and you might be racing in 5 days. Do you have any tips of like how you get back in that routine? Like actually anything that you actually do? Like some people are like, oh, I never really eat on the plane because that makes me feel weird. Or like there's grounding that people go and like hang out in the grass. Like some athletes have different things they do. Is there anything that you do that you just feel like when I land the next 10 hours, I got to do this because it's going to help me get back on track as fast as possible?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. The biggest thing is like, as soon as I land, like trying to wind down from the big travel as best as you can and go to sleep. But for me, it's different every time. Like sometimes jet lag hits me really hard, sometimes it doesn't. But I find that just like getting on a schedule ASAP when you arrive is super helpful. Like the first couple of days, it's painful to set your alarm at 7:30 or whatever, but I just have to. Otherwise, it seems like the jet lag adjustment takes like twice as long. That's super, super important for me. And then also just kind of like, normally I have a little bit of a morning routine, you know, I get up, I'll do some like mobility or have a bit of like that time in the morning, and just to keep those things wherever I am and wherever I'm traveling to is super important. So it just feels like more normal. And if that means like traveling with your big yoga mat, like that's what I do.
Are you doing yoga in the airport maybe if you had to?
I have actually. There's a yoga room in, I think it's Chicago.
Really?
In the airport. It's it's kind of weird, you go in, but it's like really quiet. And if there's nobody in there, it's a really nice place. Just if you happen to be going through Chicago, it's there.
I love that. There's been many times, and this is more just because I'm getting old. I'm in my 40s. So it's like, oh man, needed to go do my like fire hydrants and my cat camel and downward dog. And I'm definitely not going to do it by the gate. So yeah, if there was a yoga meditation, just a quiet space, that would be huge. Talking internationally, you actually, I think it was on maybe your website, you had kind of in your blurb of going through where you've gone, you said, I was getting my butt kicked internationally in the beginning. Was that something that motivated you? Like, okay, this is a stepping stone to where I want to go in my career. Or at the same time, you're in Europe. You might be, you know, surrounded by people that speak a different language. You might be feeling like, I don't know, you're a little fish in the big ocean now. Was that intimidating? Like, how did you adapt to that? What was that feeling as you're like, okay, whew, these girls are strong?
I would say it was both. It was both motivating and super challenging, mentally tough at times, like just getting kind of beat down again and again and again, but also motivating to see like where that's the level, and like, okay, how can I get there? And like I said, like those were races and experiences where I saw that, okay, there's big physical improvements I need to make, or there's big technical improvements. The mental side is so big, but it's harder to recognize, I feel like, especially like in the moment of having like a hard couple races or a hard, you know, season. But yeah, I mean, my first race, my first few international races were super challenging. The courses for starters over there are just at another level. And sometimes like it's normal to, you know, race rain or shine. So if the course is completely slick and you're going off these features that are challenging in the dry, but treacherous in the wet, they're still doing it. So you just have to like get over that and race through it. So that was, yeah, there's always like big challenges with that, but I was really motivated. And I think what helped is having like, not being over there for too long. You know, I'd go over and maybe I had two races that I can remember when I was in a junior years. And then you come back to the US and you can kind of reset and like get your bearings, be like, okay, like let's make the map and like how am I going to get better, you know? Whereas if you're in it for so long, it can be, yeah, it can really beat you down.
What do you think, you've brought up the physical and the mental again, what do you think are some of, obviously we all talk about watts, but, and I'm going to clarify for anyone that's listening, I'm a roadie, I dabble in gravel. So if I ask a question, you're like, oh my God, this guy clearly is not mountain bike. I don't mountain bike. Physically though, I mean, whether we're talking short track, XCO, like it's a very different sport than, and if Rody hasn't watched any of these races on YouTube, you should go watch it. It's like, it, when you said, talk about a wet course, it scares me. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. I can't believe she just did that. Like, what is it physically and then tactically? Because someone on the road, you know, we had a Jason Hillenmeyer was on here one time and he said, I can't remember the huge mountain bike rider that came and rode with him on his own, in his own backyard, his own town. And he goes, I realized his level when he was showing me new lines on the trails I ride week in and week out. He's like, he blew my mind. So I can kind of understand that technical side, but when you talk about physical and then also the technical, like what really jumps out to you that you've been trying to get better at, or just a tip for other riders out there that they might not even be thinking of? I mean, you've forgotten so much about mountain biking that a lot of people haven't even absorbed yet. So what do you kind of think about when you're talking about those aspects of riding?
Yeah. As far as like the World Cup circuit and the racing right now, I think we're kind of seeing a bit of a change, a shift in the courses and the racing, because it's just getting a lot faster. Like the speeds are just higher. We're seeing kind of more like man-made courses, like the one at World Champs this year. Snowshoe was also, they made some changes that just kind of make the speed a bit faster. I think it's just more, it's better for viewing purposes, for spectators. And so as the racers, that changes a bit, because the race dynamic kind of shifts from to more like a short track. And maybe like the gaps are smaller, the speeds are just higher. So that's definitely been like something that I've seen change, but I'm also, it's my second, I just finished my second year in the elite category. And I feel like I'm, not playing catch up, but just like I'm building and building and getting closer to where I want to be. But yeah, like, so that's why I feel like, there's always improvements to be made in my fitness, which is mainly just like building my fitness and my, stamina and, just being able to handle the speeds and not just like a fast race throughout, but a good start and then you know, sustain that. And then at the same time, play it well mentally and ride your bike well and, you know, tackle all of the technical aspects of the course and the races.
It seems like there's no time for a mistake in a race. That's whether it's 30 minutes or 90 minutes. I mean, mistakes are extremely costly in your sport. It's road. There's a little bit more leeway at times, but how much do you work on the start in your training? And do you do like standing start, any particular workouts that you do? And is that something that you seem to excel at, or do you think it's more of a weakness, or how do you look at that? 'Cause it's obviously crucial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely train that. I train a lot on my mountain bike and my mountain bike pedals and shoes. I think that's really important. Something that maybe people don't think about, but just being used to those, like to clipping in. And so practicing starts with, you know, 1 foot on the ground or clipped in, just kind of a variety, is definitely something that, yeah, I do all season long. And yeah, I think it's something that I've built, like, I've built the power for that, over the years, and kind of like by just focusing on it a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, the other thing is like, you can be really good at clipping in and starting fast, but when you're on the starting grid in row 4 or 5, it's actually not a very fast start. Like, you have to, you know, wait a few seconds and then just navigate the chaos. And so it almost becomes more of like, you need to really hone in on reacting to what's around you and like floating through the field and finding your pedal smoothly. But you can't, sometimes it's physically not possible to just, you know, move up super fast. So it's more important to just kind of navigate through that chaos.
How do you do that? So say, I'm assuming you would know, okay, I've got a fourth row start on maybe after the Friday night event. So you're thinking going into Sunday, like, okay, hey, these are the opportunities to pass possibly, or you tell me, how do you make up those positions? 'Cause just like you said, it's not Zwift. You can't just ride through everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, depending on how short track goes, like when you're starting third or fourth row, it's definitely an added stress element. It's kind of a little bit like more anxiety, a little more stress, like how it's going to go. Oftentimes it sucks, but it's a lot about luck. You know, if the person in front of you has a good start, or if you line up behind like a good starter or a bad starter, that could completely change your start. But I think for me, I've found that, you know, the start is important, but it's not everything. And I've kind of had to like let go of perfectionism in the start, because there's so much you cannot control, and more think about like just staying in my own race. As I said, like just kind of floating through the chaos as best as I can. And then when you get to a place that's wider, or maybe after the start loop, then moving up and just, yeah, kind of like being calm and pacing myself through the race has been a lot more effective than, trying to start really, really well, and then maybe getting caught behind stuff, wasting energy, and, backwards.
That's a really good tip. I'm thinking of people, like, you get to race a lot. So for athletes that maybe, you know, maybe they're racing twice a month, and the whole aspect, I can't remember if it was you somewhere had said, or somebody else, that, you know, obviously, okay, good start important, but also have to be strong at the end. So if you know you have a 90 minute event, would you recommend to people like, hey, have some sessions that are 90 minutes where you're starting hard, you're kind of like simming this, or maybe even you do workouts like this. I don't know if maybe you race enough that you don't need to do something like that. Has that ever been anything you've done before in training, or just something that your body gets used to, that duration and not crumbling at 60 minutes, you're like, oh, okay, my race is over. I have nothing left.
Yeah. I don't train like frequently, I guess, kind of those simulations. I guess what's really helpful is, you know, when you can just like do a training race, or you know, maybe you have a local weeknight, you know, gathering where everyone just tries to go kill themselves on the bikes, and things like that are really helpful, just to kind of like, you're doing an effort, you're going all out, but you also have that competitiveness, and maybe you even get like a little bit nervous before the start, and like, great, you know, that's kind of simulating how you feel before a race. And I always push myself harder when I'm like training or sprinting or, you know, doing a workout with someone else. So that, yeah, that's a great way to train for sure.
That's a really good point. Do you ever ride in the road?
Not so much. I mean, not like group, not big group rides. Okay. Yeah. Training, like, you know, long endurance on the roads, but yeah.
What type of, when you do a long endurance ride, how long do you go for?
Typically like between 4 and 5 hours. Okay. That's kind of the max for me. It's definitely not the same as Cole. our trainings are so different. And it's been interesting to kind of see the change from when he was training for cross country to now shifting over to endurance. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just how much more volume they're doing.
Yeah. If you had stayed around, and if, I mean, it's better for the mountain bike career obviously to be on a French based team, but say you were still doing Orange Shield stuff and still racing mountain bike, do you think being around other gravel people, you maybe would have, do you have any desire to, I know you did Mid South and maybe a few others that I just don't know about, but do you have any interest in gravel, or is it you're full on with mountain bike?
Yeah, for me, it's full on mountain bike. I miss the scene, the cycling scene in the US. And when I went back and raced Little Sugar this year and I hung around for Big Sugar, I was like, yeah, I mean, it's so special. The energy, the vibes are so, so unique and so different than a World Cup. Everyone is, you know, socializing and talking and friendly and hanging out. And at the World Cups, everyone is just so focused and serious and yeah, definitely higher stress for me. But yeah, I love the opportunity to race those longer endurance races. But for me, for now, yeah, it's just full focus on World Cups and the Olympics. So
yeah,
I'm excited that those events are there for maybe sometime in the future.
Cool. That's awesome. Has there ever been anything you've done in training that you feel like kind of slowed you down? Not like negative on anything, but you're like, oh, I look back, like that really wasn't for me, or maybe I wouldn't have gone down that road.
Yeah. Definitely. It's funny. Like, I think just training too hard, being too focused, and like, I think I can remember so many times in high school where I was super motivated, and sometimes to a fault. You know, like it's pouring rain outside and I'm like, I have this training on the schedule. I have to go do it. And I would go do it. And yeah, maybe like I'd get sick, or I wouldn't get sick, but I'd be like, you know, under so much stress. And I think at such a young age, like it was so unnecessary. But to me, it felt like if I don't do this, you know, I'm going to fall so much far behind, and I cannot miss this. Like, I can't afford it. But yeah, I think just things like that are just so unnecessary. And something I definitely didn't see that when I was younger. And it's still really hard for me. Like, you know, when basically it goes back to like listening to your body. It's so challenging as an athlete. And you know, maybe you are exhausted, but you're like, am I being soft? Am I being weak? Or should I really like take a rest day? So it's still really a challenge for me. And I have good people like Cole to remind me to take a chill pill when I'm in doubt.
To play a devil's advocate, because I still have these conversations with myself, which is sad. But maybe that's what made you so good. maybe that's what's driven you to be someone who, when I ask you about graveling, you're like, well, you know, I've got World Cups and, you know, there's this thing called the Olympics, and like, you're at the highest level, which is insane. It, you know, maybe that obsession, and I don't know, maybe not, but it's just something I always, you know, you're crushing. So there's gotta be a little bit, that might be a positive thing too. I don't know. I see what you're saying, but yeah, I think a lot of people lack that.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people are like, yeah. Oh, it's raining. Never mind. Oh, it's not convenient today.
I don't know. Honestly, if I were to like tell a younger racer, my advice, I still hold true to that. Like, I think it's just unnecessary. And when you're young, like I remember in high school, I would be, you know, so focused, like, oh no, I have a 3-hour ride on Saturday. Like, I can't go hang out or like have a sleepover. Mm. And it's just things like that. It's like, that sucks. Like, that's sad. You know, I really wish that I took advantage of more opportunities, like, you know, to try different sports in high school, because I think, yes, it's good. I was really motivated in my sport. But like, it's not going to hold you back. It's not going to like make it so like, no, you can't reach the highest level in what you're doing. Like, you can always go back.
What other sports would you have gone for?
Oh gosh. I was really into soccer when I was like in middle school. I was not good, but I really enjoyed it. So I don't know. I feel like, I always think that's something that like I would have wanted to pursue, but I probably would have been shit at it.
you never know where it takes you. I mean, it's, yeah, I played soccer. I was not good. And then a volleyball coach, I'm tall. So they were hounding me to come play. And I was like, I don't want to play volleyball. Who plays volleyball? And then they were like, it'll be right before basketball. And so you're going to come into basketball, like, ready to go. And I was like, sold, let's go. And so, you know, you never know where different sports go, but yeah, that's interesting. I think it is a good point. I think there's a lot to be said too, from what we see, what we take from one sport and bring to another. I always think, I actually think of basketball as, I think that's helped me, like, court awareness. Although I'm 6'5", which is short for a center in high school, it's like on the borderline, but being able to see everything and understanding my positioning, I think, has really helped me in road racing of the Peloton, of being able to, like, you kind of have to like zoom back, like the 0.5 zoom on the iPhone now. And I've thought about that, because I've talked to other teammates at different points, and they're so like, there's blinders on. I'm like, dude, you got to open your like lens, because it's more than just like when you smash. There's like, play the chess game here. So yeah, I'd be curious what you might pick up in soccer that brings you into the XCO world, but for another life to figure that one out. What, when you kind of were talking about talking to younger cyclists, or maybe even looking back to yourself again, aside from, you know, kind of went back to your finding the balance, what's any lessons that, you know, you would definitely want to pass on, aside from just, hey, you know, try other things, don't be too obsessive, or maybe a good lesson that you learned that's another cyclist passed along to you that sticks out to you?
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, I would say like, I think an obvious one is like to like, don't underestimate the power of recovery or resting. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, people, I mean, if you're like training and following a plan or whatever, like, the rest is so important. And again, like I said, something I'm still learning. But yeah, I think it's so, so crucial, and people really underestimated and are like pulled because they're, you know, motivated, or they see other people doing stuff, or they see something on social media that, you know, people only post on social media how hard they're training. They never share like how hard they're resting, or, you know, when they're not doing anything.
I love that. I don't know who said this, but people always quote it when it's like, are you overtrained or under recovered? And I think it's a great line. What's your recovery protocol? Let's say you just are finishing up a big block, or maybe even on more micro, like you just smashed a weekend of racing, then on Monday you're like, woof, I'm feeling that one. What's your go-to, you know, yeah, what's your protocol?
Yeah, trying to do nothing, which is hard because like, yeah, on rest days, it's kind of when you catch up on everything else, on emails and, you know, meetings or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think just on the day to day, like fueling and kind of trying to just get on top of the fueling, you know, right after your workouts. And also on the rest days, like it's a really important day to not like cut back, you know. And you know, if I have time, like taking a nap is really good, especially when I'm like in race season and traveling and moving a lot. I find myself a lot more tired, and yeah, it's really hard because the recipe is just like trying to clear your schedule, and that's a challenge.
That is a challenge. Are you doing recovery rides, or are you just focused on getting all the other life things done that day?
Sometimes it depends. I definitely take like one full day off the bike, at least once a week. But then there's other days that are like maybe a more recovery focused ride. I like to just kind of keep the body going and moving, but sometimes, again, it's kind of my like obsessiveness of like wanting to do something all the time. And sometimes it's really better just to like, no, today is like, you're not getting on that bike.
Yeah, no, that's good. Speaking of life things, something I'm curious that Cole actually, for those that don't know, Cole was on the podcast before and you'd talk, there's a little blurb on your blog about it, just how you started your own squad in 2021 with your partner, Cole. What was that like? And I think this is just, I'd love to hear kind of your take on the way I take it is all of a sudden you guys didn't have a team. You said, hey, we're going to do our own thing and we're going to go try and find sponsors. And I think I was watching like a Lifetime video and Cole made the comment, we got 100 no's and we just kept going. And can you tell me how did you feel through that, or how did you take it in? Is that accurate? Because it's got to be really hard. Like that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a super tough time, for both of us. Yeah, we were without a contract and it was, I think like November, early November, of 2020. So COVID had hit, everything was unknown, you know, for the next year. And, we kind of were like, you know, do we continue racing or is this like, do we need to go, you know, do something else? But we really like, yeah, I think pushed each other. And, I was 20. I didn't know, yeah, how to reach out to sponsors, how to email, a resume or, you know, a portfolio. I just started like putting together this portfolio and we decided to do it together. Cause we felt like it maybe had more value as a duo. And yeah, just kind of just sending it to anyone and everyone. And we got, yeah, so many no responses. And it was really frustrating cause you know, you put so much time into it. And we were both just like trying to believe in each other, like, but we were also like, should we be like doing this? Is this dumb? And we were able to put together a little program with huge support from Orange Seal. And we got ourselves racing the next year. I remember like in January 1st of our goal was to have both of us have one built bike by January 1st. Cause we were getting like frames from these people and parts from over here. And I remember, in the bike shop, like late at night on like around Christmas or in January. Yeah, just like trying to help Cole build these bikes. We were like so frustrated, so exhausted from training. And we're like, yeah, realizing we had to order parts and we were missing stuff. And then to finally like get that bike complete, it was like such a good feeling. But yeah, it was a really challenging time and a big learning experience, just kind of throwing ourselves into the business world of what it takes to run your own program and negotiate with partners and advocate for yourself and then show up and try to perform.
What are some tips that you learned from that process?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big ones is like, you know, we reached out to so many people, got so many no's or no replies, and just like that's going to happen, and just to keep believing, I guess. And then also like just putting yourself out there to people. At it really was a year where, you know, I'm kind of a an introvert. Like I'm not naturally like super bubbly and like open and, you know, talking to everybody until I get to know you. But yeah, it was definitely like we were just pushing ourselves to like at every event, you know, go talk to people, just, you know, introduce yourself. Like it's uncomfortable. It's maybe a little awkward, but I think that became natural. And that was something that's just a super important thing to know how to do. And in the industry, like it's so important, and those personal relationships are so meaningful, and something that we really valued. So the partners that we had, we wanted to have a personal relationship with them and for them to know our faces and yeah, so that was definitely like something that was very uncomfortable, but really important, and I think helped us a lot.
I think it's a skill that you'll look back on and you'll use it over and over. I mean, I was a sales rep for a really long time, and a guy once told me, you're either selling or you're being sold to. And selling to whoever you're selling to is so nerve-wracking, and I hated it at first. And it's like once I kind of understood the game and how to, it was almost like a start line, like controlling my emotions, especially if there's like something big on the line, and putting yourself out there, and also knowing your stuff. You know, you have a sponsor that comes back and is like, well, what's da 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 da, and you've got to know your story and know your blurb, and don't and get nervous. And so I'm sure you'll look back on that at some point, and maybe that feels even better now, being on a factory team. And you can look back, you're like, man, all right, I'm not building my own bike at midnight anymore. So that's got to feel like a big accomplishment.
Yeah, definitely. It's been incredible. And I'm, yeah, for sure, super grateful for that whole year. In the moment, it was like really challenging and yeah, just really hard to keep the confidence of racing and then performing. But yeah, so many skills learned, and no better and harder way than to be thrown into it like that. At the same time, I was in school full time and studying business, and it was like kind of a really interesting parallel that we were, you know, applying in the real world, and I was also in school. So yeah, it gave me so many skills, but yeah, definitely a challenging time. But yeah, I think going back to something you said about advice I'd give to younger people, yeah, is like the path for me was nowhere near straight, you know, like it was not a straight trajectory, and I would never have believed that of all like the stops that I made on the way to now racing like on the World Cup circuit. I think I jumped from different teams and I had different support, and Cole and I made our own program. And there were times when I didn't believe that it would be possible, and times that I did. And, you know, you never know. And it's really hard, but important to just never, ever give up in yourself and what you believe in. So.
I love that. I was listening to a podcast and this woman had said, we want to think that we know what our destiny is, but our only job is to show up. And it was like mic drop. I was like, that is powerful, because I think we all at some point we think what we're going to we know what we're going to be doing in 3 years. And then we go down the road of life. It's like, whoa, this did not see all these things coming. This is a surprise. So yeah, something I try to ride the wave. It's the journey. I'm curious about a couple things on nutrition. I had heard you talk about pre-race nutrition. You're big on the carbs, at least you used to be. I'm curious if you still are. And you were talking about taking on like 10 grams per kilo of body weight, which is, you know, carb loading in my mind. What leads you down that path? Because there's other athletes that will ask me like, hey, I don't really need to carb load for this crit because it's only 90 minutes or it's 60 minutes. And I'm a big fan of carbs. So I'm curious, what's your thought process in that? A lot of carbs, not a super long event. Do you find it beneficial for the race or for recovery after, or what's your plan there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely for both. For me, like it's a funny question because carbs are like, that's my fuel. It's super important to get your nutrition dialed, but also just more making, like, sometimes dialed people are like, well, how do I do that? But just making sure you're getting enough and enough of the right things, which before for me, my 90 minute races is carb. And I think for Cole and in the longer endurance races, it's the same, maybe a little few tweaks, but yeah, for me, I, over the years have kind of like, I remember, I think the science has changed too. And I'm not like the best person to ask about the nitty gritty details, but, for me, I try to shoot for, yeah, that, 10 grams per kilogram of body weight in carbs. And I do that, the day before my events. So I maybe kind of, cut back a little bit on the fat just so I, feel I can get in that amount of carbs. And it's really important, especially for these doubleheader weekends where we're racing short track on Friday night. We finish racing at 7:30. We have to sleep after we've raced for 30 minutes and, you know, we're taffed up and adrenaline is pumping. So, and then the next day is like full recovery, prepare for XC. And that's when like I'll be carb loading and everything. And then, yeah, race for the 90 minute event. So, yeah, carbs super important. And it's never like I love food. I love eating. So it's never, never like really a challenge for me. But definitely finding like the right foods to eat. Like I keep it pretty simple, like rice, simple pastas, and like just pretty clean carbs.
And I liked how you said dialed, like it's not always going to be the exact same, because as you're talking about traveling before, you might be in Spain, you might be in France, you might be here. They're not always going to have all the same things. So you just keep it simple and then just take on whatever carbs you get your hands on. Like you can't be too tied to some magical pre-race meal, I'd assume.
Yeah. I mean, I try to, over the years being more in Europe, I've definitely, like at first I was like, my first time in Europe, I'm like, where do I, all this food is different. Like the brands are different and everything. And so it was really hard to find the same things like, you know, you would be used to. And now I feel like I've navigated the supermarkets and the stores well enough to like, yeah, everything that is here, I can find there. But definitely like for me, rice and chicken or rice and eggs is a pretty standard pre-race night meal. And it's nice because I can find that anywhere. You know, everywhere has rice, eggs. So that can always kind of be the same.
Cool. Thinking about off the bike stuff, do you run at all or do any strength training, or what else are you doing besides riding?
Yeah, I definitely do like mobility kind of activation strength, more dynamic stuff, not so much like heavy squats and stuff in the gym, but just keeping like a good mobility and activation routine year round. And then riding my mountain bike, for me is like the best strength training I think I could be doing. And then supplemented with like some more dynamic, like activation stuff. But yeah, just kind of, keeping those muscles like moving and working throughout the year, and not like hanging up my mountain bike for months during the off season, really helps me, and it keeps my skills, pretty like honed too.
Do you do any like low cadence, high torque type work, or literally just go ride the trails, or anything like specific on the bike that you feel like is good for strength?
Yeah, definitely. I do like some, you know, more high torque efforts. I mean, a bit of everything, but as far as like overall strength, I think for me, it's really, helpful when my upper body feels strong, because these courses and mountain biking in general is so physical. So yeah, like having at least a couple of days a week where I'm riding like challenging trails where, it's super technical. And then also when I can, like, you know, working it out with like my interval session to maybe do like a really challenging descent after my interval set, or as part of it, you know, just to kind of simulate like, a race course as much as I can.
I like that. What do you would, you should bring the blog back. That's my one tip. I've like enjoyed reading the 2021, there's some, you actually can find, I think it's your old blog. I don't even know if I knew it, like a Weebly one. That's like way back. I think maybe into Nike days or like 2018.
Oh yeah.
Way back. Yeah. I was doing some Googling, but you had talked about passion to inspire other people to discover the bike as a lifelong sport and really feel empowered on the bike. So you would talk kind of when you and Cole were trying to figure out what the next move is. Hey, is this crazy? Should we stop doing this? Say mountain biking ends tomorrow. You can't race. How do you think the bike stays in your life? Or maybe another endurance sport. It's not soccer, but you know, what do you think as a lifelong athlete, where do you think that'll take you? You obviously can't predict the future, but you know, if it was like not competitive, the national champion days are in the past. Where do you see that going?
Yeah, I mean, I think I will always be active and like into something, some kind of sport. I see the bike as always being part of my life. I mean, I feel like I have a really healthy relationship with it in that, I don't really get burnt out on riding the bike. And I love that it can either be a really intense training tool or device, and it can also just be like a way to commute, you know, or to get from one place to the other, or just to go out and feel the breeze on your face and get some exercise. So, I think it'll always be in my life, but I think, yeah, if there was more time opened up, I would, I'd get into maybe running or hiking or, just, I don't know, some other kind of way movement. I definitely have a lot of interests, outside of the bike. I grew up sailing, and, Cole introduced me to skiing when I went to college in Colorado with him. Definitely something that I would like to master sometime in my future, but now I'm definitely not mastering it quite yet. So yeah, there's so many things.
Nordic or downhill skiing?
He taught me to actually do both.
Okay.
I really want to learn how to backcountry ski.
Okay.
But I think I need to just get more comfortable on the skis first.
Yeah.
I grew up in California, and
right. There
we didn't go to the snow. It wasn't close. So yeah, it was very, very foreign when I got on the skis for the first time.
So I was surrounded by snow. So people were like, you need to stop riding your bike when it's 20 degrees out. You need to get into Nordic skiing. And so I did some skate skiing, so hard, so challenging. Shout out to Marty and Jason, who tried to teach me it's like swimming, right? You can't like fight the snow. So they're giving me the technique tips, which were massive, but you can only get you know, I was still Cat 5 when the first winter was over, and I was like, this is cool, but I don't like driving an hour to go here, and so yeah, I came up with a bunch of excuses and rode the trainer. But I have two quick questions last with respect to your time that are from mountain bikers that heard I was podcasting with you, and they're like, oh my God, dude, you have to ask her these questions. I said, okay, I'm gonna ask her at the end because I don't want to mess up the vibe of the interview. She's like, this guy doesn't mountain bike. Why is he asking me this? Okay. How do you dial in tire pressure? Do you use something like the Cork device that shows you exact tire pressure on your phone, or do you do hot laps? And how does this change between the Friday night race and then the Sunday race? And let's say conditions are going to be the same.
Okay. Yeah. Good question. Yeah, tire pressure is really important to me. I have kind of figured out what the kind of range of pressure that I like over the years, and it's what I keep for training. And then it's tweaked a little bit for the races, but usually just by like a PSI or two. And I feel like I am always kind of on the conservative side if it's really rocky or super dry conditions and, you know, there's a lot of flat risk, I will always like keep it a little higher, or at least in the rear, just to avoid that. I also run an insert most of the time in the rear, which for me is just, yeah, it allows me to run a little bit lower pressure so I have more grip, but reduces the risk of like a pinch flat or something like that. And in the last year, I have invested in a tire pressure gauge, which for me is really important because then I can just check my pressure before every ride with the same tire pressure gauge. So I have the confidence that like, I know it's what I set it at. I've had so many rides where I get out there and I'm like, feeling kind of sketchy, kind of slipping around. And I'm like, I feel like my tires are too hard, you know? So just like that ease of mind, and just like knowing that you have the right pressure in there.
Are you talking about one of those little digital gauges that you just pop on there? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little, I've never used the phone. Like, I don't even know how that works. It's way too high tech for me.
So this is funny that you bring it up. I was at Masters Nationals and I was like, man, I don't know. It's not like the bike just feels, it must be the heat. I realized the gauge broke and I was like 10 PSI off. And I was like, this just doesn't seem right. And I then was next to this guy. I'm like, hey man, can I double check with your pump? He's like, well, hold on, let me show you this thing. I'm going to test this. He's like, oh dude, yours is way off. He's like, did you use this yesterday? I'm like, yeah, yes, I did. So I bought a Topeak one. And well, someone's going to want me to ask, what tire inserts are you using?
It's a European brand. They're Adriani Supermousse.
Okay.
I think is cool. The name. Yeah. I think it's like a French brand and I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but.
Parlez-vous français?
Not so much.
Okay. Last question. And just to clarify for the other roadies out there, in these events, you pick hardtail or full suspension. Correct me if I'm wrong, you have to use the same bike on Friday and Sunday. Do you ever ride hardtail or is it always full suspension? And how do you choose between the two if you do?
Yeah, this year we've only had a full suspension. And last year I had a hardtail, but I raced the majority on the full suspension. And I feel like the weight difference is so minimal. At least like it depends what bike brand you're on, but for us it's super, super small. So for me, like it's a no, I don't know. I think that the full suspension, like I'm so content racing it on like pretty much all of the courses these days. And even if it's a pretty smooth course, but there's like a bunch of braking bumps or you know, I think that you can just recover so much better with the full suspension on the downhills that, and the weight difference isn't that much that for me, it's worth, not having to like switch bikes, on and off throughout the year. And your body has to get used to a whole new like geometry and everything. Right. So taking that out has really kind of Made it a lot easier, I feel like, on my body throughout a long season.
Are we talking like 2 pounds difference or 5 pounds, or what's the, do you know off the top of your head, like how close?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd say it's more around like 2 pounds, but okay. it does depend on the bike brand.
Sure. Sevilia, thank you so much for doing this. Any final comments for the people? You've already given a ton of advice. So usually I'm like, hey, drop another gem on people, but you've already littered us with those, and really appreciate your candor and just kind of opening up about not only your process, but just, you know, going through the hard times and the successes, and congrats on all the success, which I should say at the start. Any parting words for all the people that'll be listening to you?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And yeah, shout out Cole for connecting us.
Yes,
and
Cole,
it
thank
was
you.
Great to.
Okay, so I felt terrible because Cole, you know, I hit him up and I don't personally know Cole, and he was so gracious to come on. And then there were quite a few people that were saying, hey, Cole was awesome. Can you get his girlfriend on? And I was like, I don't know Sevilia either. So I'm actually gonna have to email Cole. Hey, I'm gonna like IG Sevilia, and it might not go on. Can you like check if she wants to do a podcast? I felt so bad. She's so gracious. She's like, oh dude, yeah. He goes, I'll give a nudge and we'll see where it goes. And so thank you for reaching out. There were a lot of people that are super excited to hear from you. So we're really thankful that you're so gracious with your time. And yeah, this is great. Really appreciate it. Everybody, oh, the best place, maybe she'll get back to blogging. You guys can Google the blog. Instagram, is that the best place for people to keep up with you, or any other like social media type things that you're into? TikTok or Twitter, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, no, Instagram is the best place. It's the most up to date. And yeah, I am working on my website again. So hopefully some
Let's
more
go.
Stuff will be up there. But yeah, stay tuned.
Awesome. Everybody check it out. And thank you so much for your time. Everybody go give her a follow on IG. Watch for the new posts on the blog, and we'll talk to you all soon.